How would you like to be able to become an accidental property millionaire? Cody Stegeman will tell us how. He is a real estate investor and owner, and he helps people build generational wealth through real estate investing. So Cody, tell us, how can someone become an accidental millionaire? Imagine they're currently making 100K plus.
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
For sure. So really, it boils down to two different pathways. You can either purchase properties that you want to live in yourself, like small multifamily, or you can buy investment properties. But the way it kind of happens accidentally is it doesn't take a lot of units, even a half dozen. If you just purchase them year over year, as you're able to save up some money, reinvest that cash flow, and you own them for the next 15 to 20 years as the note gets paid down, at the end of it, you will end up a multimillionaire with a very real income coming in every month.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit more about that, like how it would work exactly. What other strategies are there? Or tell us more about this particular strategy.
For sure. So to kind of dive in deeper on the two most common pathways, the first one is called owner-occupant housing. So we have the ability here to get into properties for little to no money down, depending on your market. So for example, I could go buy a fourplex, live in one of the units myself, and I could get into it for as little as 1.5% down. So that can remove the cash barrier for being able to purchase some of these properties. And you'd be able to do that every 12 to 18 months. So after a half dozen years, you potentially could have anywhere from 10 to 15 units without a giant cash inflow. And anybody that's working a full-time job, making a full-time income, would be able to do that on top of their normal job. And then, of course, the other pathway is if you have a higher savings rate and you're a little more liquid, you can buy a property putting 20% down, and then you can adjust the rents, make small improvements to increase that cash flow, and then reinvest that cash flow and essentially cycle that purchasing process year over year as well. And those two primary strategies, like I said, it's really easy to build a moderate sized portfolio where you're generating real cash every month. And then as it gets paid down every year, your net worth just keeps going up and up. And the next thing you know, you literally are a millionaire.
Thank you. For those people that don't have a deposit, what can they do to kind of get on the property ladder?
For sure. So the easiest way to do that is actually to reach out to your local network of other investors and find someone that is more liquid and willing to invest into deals if you find a good deal. So even the first place that I bought personally myself, I was underwriting deals. I found a really good deal, and I actually found someone that was willing to lend me the down payment to purchase the property. So if you can educate yourself and operate with confidence, you're going to be able to find other investors that are willing to invest in your deals. So if you are not very liquid, my recommendation is network like crazy, find other investors, and then partner with one of them.
Thank you. Tell us more about your experience becoming a property millionaire. What are the kind of steps that you took in order to build your property portfolio that other entrepreneurs could leverage on as well?
For sure. So the first thing was self-education. It's very easy to want to dive in headfirst to any entrepreneur endeavor. But the reality is, if you aren't educating yourself, you're going to make a lot of mistakes and it's going to cost you a lot of money. So read books, listen to podcasts like this one, do everything you can to kind of understand the investing process. And once you feel like you have a good hold on it, then it's just time to start taking action, obviously. And whether it's buying a deal on your own or partnering with another investor, just get the first deal done, because the first one is always the scariest. But once you've actually purchased one, you realize it's not as intimidating as you had originally thought. And then once you start that, you figure out what your niche is going to be long term, whether you're going to lean into a fix and flip, small multifamily, large multifamily, wholesale, whatever it might be. Lean into that niche and pursue it relentlessly, and then just start growing your wealth. And a lot of people make the mistake of jumping around between too many things, not educating themselves, and just kind of floundering. So educate, network, and stick to the one pathway, and it will work for you.
Thank you. What's first? Is it Building a superpower team that can support you to achieve your property goals, or finding the deal?
That's actually a pretty contentious question, because a lot of people have different schools of thought on it. So for me, I would recommend we build having a manager, an agent, a lender, and a contractor is kind of your core four that you're going to work with. And, you know, these can be subcontractors. These aren't employees. These are just people in your market that you can work with. Once you have that baseline developed, then I say that you're fine to go ahead and take action. If you try to build out an entire giant team with employees up front, I think you're taking on a lot of overhead and setting up a lot of extra work that's kind of unnecessary. But once you develop that core group of people, then you're ready to go ahead and start taking action.
Thank you. What's the best way for someone to find the right property deals?
So to start, networking. A lot of people want to dive into spending money for marketing and mailers and cold calling and stuff like that. But if you develop good relationships with people in the market you're going to be working in, you're going to have a natural deal flow. For example, we have a ton of relationships with agents in our local markets, and we get a lot of pocket listings and off-market listings where we're able to get into deals before anybody else does, because we've worked with these people long-term and they know us. And even when we were first starting, I literally called every single agent in my local market and said, "Hey, my name is Cody. I'm a local investor. This is the type of property I'm looking for. If you find something that fits that, please call me and I'd love to come take a look at it." So I think developing that network and connecting with like agents and lenders and contractors in your market, you're going to have a natural deal flow that's going to be able to provide you with good deals coming in.
Thank you. What's the best way to incentivize the people in your network to become part of your superpower team? And how do you keep them motivated and excited about working with you in particular, and not throwing the same deals to like thousands or hundreds of thousands of other people?
For sure. The biggest thing that's worked for us, honestly, is executing efficiently in a timely manner and being good to work with. I know it sounds like a really low bar, but for example, we have wholesalers that we work with that consistently bring us deals, because they know that if we look at the deal and we underwrite it, and we think it's a good deal, that we have the money to close, we're going to close, we're not going to attempt to beat them up last minute, throw in extra contingencies. Like, we will execute and we are good to work with. And I firmly believe that is one of the easiest ways to make sure people keep coming back to you. Even something like working with contractors. If you actually pay your contractors on time, you communicate well, you're immediately above most people that they're working with. So that consistency in executing and doing what you say you're going to do is going to give you a leg up most of the time to be above most of your competition.
Thank you. What's the best way for you to build a reputation when nobody knows you and this is your very first deal?
I think being transparent, because people can tell that you're genuine. If you tell them, "I'm very excited, I am going to execute, I'm looking to do my first deal," I think that transparency lends a lot of credibility to yourself, because you're being honest and straightforward. And then the other side of that, that's where JVing or working with another person, partnering on a deal, lends a lot of credibility. Because if you are partnering with an investor in your local market, that immediately gives you additional credibility. And like I said, when I had first started, I did that quite a bit, where I could say, "Hey, I'm working with X, Y, or Z on this property," and people knew who that person was. So that immediately made me more credible. So be genuine and honest, and then partner with people that are more well-known in the market.
Thank you. What's the best way to steer clear of bad agents, bad landlords, bad contractors?
For sure.
Basically, bad people that will ruin your own reputation by associating yourself with them.
100%. Networking. So I am just a giant fan of developing your local network and having connections with other people in the space. Yes, you might be competitors, but you're also peers and you can lend a lot of information and insights to each other. I would always recommend find other investors that are doing the things that you want to do, figure out who they are using, and then try to go with those people if you can, because those people have been shown to be able to execute in an efficient manner. I see it all the time, especially we lean heavily into the renovation side of multifamily and real estate investing. A lot of people will hire the lowest bidder in terms of contractors, then they have problems, things aren't done on time, houses look dirty, the neighbors complain, et cetera, et cetera. And people don't vet these people. They just go with the lowest bid. And unfortunately, that's a recipe for disaster. So network, figure out who the other people in your market are using, and then use those people.
Thank you. What's the best way to find the kind of property strategy that could work for you and your personality so that you can be happy long-term investing in these types of properties so you can become an accidental millionaire?
For sure. So what I always recommend is think about what the end goal is and then reverse engineer it. And this, you know, even as far as what is your number that you want to see in terms of monthly income, what is, you know, your target net worth, figure out what those numbers look like. Figure out how much work you want to put into your business structure, and then figure out what kind of work you want to do, and then reverse engineer that formula. Because obviously, if you're someone that's hands-on or has a construction background or understands those processes, you're going to be a little more open to the idea of doing more construction-heavy projects. And if you hate that kind of stuff, I would recommend avoiding those projects, or you're going to have a lot of headaches and obviously be quite unhappy. Or if you want to hire out property managers because you don't want to do any self-management, make sure you're buying properties that are going to be easily managed by other people and not yourself. So that's where I think identifying what that end goal looks like in terms of workload and type of work activities, and then reverse engineering it, is going to be the best way to make sure long-term you're happy with the structure of your business.
Thank you. Tell us about the 70% method for property investing that I saw on your Instagram.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
Tell us about the 70% property investment method that I saw on your Instagram, the one where you are offering the 70% of the property values.
Oh, yeah. So we primarily focus on value add investing. So we can buy something that's severely discounted and distressed. We can renovate it. We can re-rent it. And then we get our valuation quite a bit higher than our purchase price. So how the strategy works is after we've refinanced, or actually after we've renovated and we put new tenants in it, we go ahead and do refinance. And the 70% of the new valuation is larger than our purchase price and renovation costs. So we're actually able to recycle all of our original money. So just for kind of loose numbers, let's say we buy a place for $30,000, we put 20 grand into it, and the new valuation is $100,000, but we'd be able to refinance, pull out a $70,000 loan, so that 70% of your total valuation, we'd be able to pull 70 grand out. That means we'd be able to pay off our initial investment amount of the $30,000 to purchase it, plus the $20,000 in renovations. So we actually end up net positive on a cash basis and own a cash flowing asset on the back end.
Thank you. I also saw that in your Instagram, you were suggesting to go around and offer 70% of the property price to some people.
Yes.
Is that part of your strategy of finding BMV properties, like below market value properties?
And yes.
What other strategies like that are there to find below market value properties?
For sure. Yeah. So like you said, to begin with the first one, just making aggressive offers is going to be the single best one. Even stuff that's on your regular listing services, it's all about right place, right time. But if you make enough offers, like I said, at a reduced price, eventually people will say yes. It's just a matter of doing enough volume. In terms of finding other good deal flow, I like to solve problems that other people are a little scared of solving. And that's where getting good at dealing with big problems usually equals big discounts. Now, whether that is, you know, a roof is in terrible shape and there's a bad leak coming into a room, maybe the basement has foundation issues in a place, maybe it's a hoarder house and it's full of garbage. Being willing to solve these problems that are very gross is going to be a giant gateway into getting big discounts into properties. And then also being flexible on the purchasing structure is going to give you a lot of power as well. For example, we actually bought a pretty big chunk of our portfolio from a gentleman who, he wanted to sell off his properties. He wanted to do it over 3 years, and he wanted to do a 1031 exchange. So we proposed, we will buy all the properties you're looking at selling. And we signed a purchase agreement where we actually gave him an entire year where he got to select the close date each year for the properties. So he had as much time as he needed to go ahead and like designate the properties, select the properties, then we could close so we could do a 1031 exchange. So I think being flexible with potential close timelines, you know, as far as people having flexible move out dates or wanting to do X, Y, and Z in the closing process, being a little more flexible sometimes too can allow you to get deeper discounts because you're willing to work with the seller.
Thank you. Are there any other ways to find below market value properties? Is it by association with certain joint venture partners, like, I don't know, divorce lawyers or something like that? Or are there any other sources that people can look at?
For sure. So we haven't worked with like a divorce lawyer or anything like that, for example, specifically, but I know, you know, we pull lists at the county level, so we can see people that are behind on taxes, for example, or we can get information on people that are going into pre-foreclosure. Those are two great resources. Circling back to having like a strong network, having agents that you work with that know that you're willing to buy these kind of deals and execute as well is going to bring you a deal flow. A lot of times for people that are in an unfortunately desperate situations where you're able to move a little more quickly and, you know, get deeper discounts on deals. And like I said, just the biggest thing here, I think, is being willing to solve big problems for people is going to be the basis of getting these deeper discounts, whether it's someone's behind on their property taxes, or, you know, like the house is distressed, or anytime you can solve big problems, there's big money to be had. And at a base level for most people starting, I think purely networking is going to be able to solve this deal flow issue for anybody. If you talk to enough agents, enough lenders, enough contractors, connect with people in your local municipality, you will have deal flow coming in for you, like, to start. And like I said, pulling those lists at the county level is another good option as well, where you can see people that are behind on taxes or having issues with the city or people that have filed evictions, things of that nature.
Thank you. Tell us your 10 top commandments for becoming a property millionaire.
For sure. So, and some of these are a little more life-based than real estate specific, but I think they tie in really well. So first of all, I would say wake up early. It might sound like kind of a cliche, but I think it's really easy in today's world for a lot of us, especially with screens and stuff. We like to stay up late, sleep in later, and there's a lot of wasted time. So I think wake up early, get after the day, and be productive, because you can always outwork your competition. And then the second one, limit screen time. I think it's a really easy trap to fall into, especially if you're an entrepreneur where you end up sitting on your phone all day. You just scroll Instagram or TikTok or YouTube or whatever, and I think it does severely inhibit your ability to get like work done. For the third one, define your why. I think people knowing why they're doing what they're doing is one of the most important things for an individual to stay like driven and motivated. So, you know, for example, like my why is I want to develop a life where I can keep spending the time I want to with my family, not have to worry about money. Like these things have motivated me through the hard times. So I think understanding why you're doing what you're doing is one of the most important things. And the fourth one, network, network, network. I mean, most of our, whether it's deals or good connections as a whole, has come through our local network. Like, we have a ton of different agents and wholesalers and everything else that bring us deals, and it's purely just come from asking questions and talking to people in our market. Fifth one, don't be afraid to say no. There's a lot of uncomfortable conversations that happen with entrepreneurship, but sometimes people's fear of hearing no stops them from taking action. So whether it's asking an agent to work with you, making an aggressive offer, whatever it is, just don't be afraid to hear no and keep asking those hard questions. Six, always keep educating yourself. I don't think anybody is beyond needing to continually learn. I mean, even myself, I'm listening to podcasts, books, everything constantly, just because the market landscape changes and there's always new investing strategies that might work better than what you're doing. Seven, once you figure out what strategy matches with how you want your business to be structured, stick with it and pursue it relentlessly. I think entrepreneurs especially are inherently susceptible to pursuing a lot of different things. You know, we get distracted easily and get excited about different things. And especially in the real estate space, once you've figured out that strategy, just dive into it. Cause you see a lot of people that they'll jump between, oh, I'm going to wholesale a little bit, or I'm going to try to do some fix and flips. Oh, I'm going to buy some multifamily. Maybe I'll do some syndication. And all of a sudden they do a little bit of a lot of different things and get no traction and don't actually execute on anything. So like I said, figure out what you want to do, what structure works for you, and then just execute and dig into that relentlessly. Number eight, this is actually kind of more of a personal one. Once again, I think practicing gratitude is huge, especially for entrepreneurs, just because I think we face a lot of adversity and difficulty, especially when you're trying to develop and grow a business, where sometimes it feels like nothing is going right. There's nothing but problems. It's really easy to fall into that trap. And I think if you practice gratitude and make sure you're thankful for the things and the things that are going well and the successes you have had, that it's going to really help you push through the hardships that do come with being an entrepreneur. Number nine, be realistic with your metrics. And once you understand what your underwriting numbers and metrics look like, you need to stick with them. This is a really common trap in the investing space, especially where people get excited and they wish hard enough for a deal to work that they somehow start making the numbers seem like they'll work for the deal. When all reality, if they were objective, they would see that the numbers don't actually work. And like I said, it's very easy, especially when you're excited, to make those mistakes. But define your numbers and your metrics for the deals that you're wanting to do, and then stick to them and try to be objective about it as much as possible. And then number 10, do what you say you're going to do. When it comes to executing as a whole, whether it's within your networking space, working with sellers, buyers, anybody, if you are known as someone that does what they say they're going to do and actually executes, it's going to be great for how people perceive you. Plus, making sure you do that consistently for yourself is a great way just to operate in general. And a lot of people, unfortunately, don't do it. They make empty promises, or they give open-ended timelines, and they don't actually execute or commit to those things. So yes, do what you say you're going to do.
Thank you. Tell us your main strategy for how you became a property millionaire and your top three case studies of either projects you've done or projects that your students have done that have become successful.
For sure. So our strategy has been very intensively into the value add space. So we like to buy stuff that is heavily distressed, under rented, ugly, gross, hoarder houses, leaky roofs, anything like that. I originally had a construction background, so I'm able to manage other construction personnel, I think, you know, pretty efficiently. So it makes it so I am less scared of these things. And that value add space has allowed us to recycle a lot of our original money, really explode our net worth, and then have assets that cash flow really strong. Plus, when we're done renovating these properties, the maintenance load is really low because we've done this long enough that I know what things we should fix when we go through a property to inhibit future maintenance calls. As far as three case studies, the first one I'll start with is, it was the first property I bought as myself. I think I have a video on my Instagram. I talked about this, where there was actually a triplex in my local market that I'd heard about. The guy was thinking about selling, but it hadn't been listed. And there was actually a drug bust at the property. And it was a whole ordeal. Everybody in town knew about it. And I reached out to him, and I threw him a lowball offer, and I offered him 80 grand for this triplex. And he was able to close, and he said, I'm done with this. I want to wash my hands of it, blah, blah, blah. And we actually went through, we rolled all the tenants, renovated all the units. It wasn't that expensive of a renovation project. It was about 20 grand all in. So I was all in for around $100,000. And then I actually moved into that property. I lived on the main level. And then between the other two units, we had a little over 2 grand coming in rent. So I was able to pay my mortgage. I was able to live for free, make money every month. And it dramatically changed my life with that first personal deal. I mean, it was, you know, over 2 grand a month in swing in terms of cost outlay for like living. For a good second example for a deal, we actually just had this one recently where there was a guy that had to move. His property was about 70% renovated, and he left because of a work need. Nobody wanted to take on the project because nobody wants to step into a project that is 70% done. We were actually able to step in and buy this, and we were there for about 5 days to finish up the work, and we ended up listing it and selling it right away. And we were actually able to make about 40 grand for 5 days of work, just because we were able to step in into that process that was kind of a headache for most potential buyers. And we were able to solve it and then list it and get it done quickly. And then as far as a third case study, this one, we actually had a fourplex in my local market that nobody really knew who had managed it. It seemed like it was kind of run down. And funny enough, I was driving by the property one day and I saw someone that was hauling garbage out of one of the units. And this is during COVID. And I actually stopped and I started talking to the person that was hauling garbage out of one of the units. And it turned out it was the owner. And he said, I am sick of owning these places. He's like, I am done having to take garbage out of these units when these people leave and leave everything here. He's incredibly frustrated. And, you know, I know my local market really well. And I made him a lowball offer on the spot for the property. And I was like, hey, I was like, if you don't want to deal with those headaches anymore, I was like, just sell me the property. I was like, I will sign paperwork today at this price. And then funny enough, he actually said yes. And we shook hands and exchanged information. We sent him an email over a little bit later that day with an offer, and everything was signed. And on that property, we bought that for $130,000. And we were able to do light renovations and roll the tenants in that property. And the rents went from around $1,800 to $3,200. So we bought it for $130. And then by the time we were done, the new valuation on it was around $275. So right place, right time, asking a little bit of an uncomfortable question, was able to generate, you know, multiple six figures in net worth just for taking those actions.
Thank you. Tell us, what's the secret to your success? What is like your secret sauce?
To be honest, I think it is being willing to outwork my competition when I was starting, especially where you don't have the resources that bigger people have. Your knowledge hasn't developed as much as what other people's has. I think me being willing to outwork my competition, especially at the front end, is what allowed me to get to where I am. Just because if you're able to put your head down and grind, whether it's making phone calls, networking, going out and having to do some of the work yourself, being able to outwork other people, I think has been the single thing that has allowed me to progress my stuff to where it is.
Thank you. What are the best habits property entrepreneurs who want to be millionaires should attempt to do every single day? You did mention a few things already. Are there any others that you believe are essential for someone to be successful as a property investor over the long term?
For sure. So the first one I would say is underwrite deals. I shoot for daily, if not daily, multiple times a week, where once you know what your metrics look like in terms of how you want to underwrite deals, practice underwriting deals. And then as you practice underwriting deals, you'll be able to tell kind of at a glance whether or not a property is worth looking deeper into. So that will save you a lot of time and effort as you progress and get better at it. Also, with that underwriting comes understanding your local market dynamics. So a lot of people don't do enough, don't put enough effort into understanding their local market, where they know for sure, hey, I can get X dollars per bedroom for this kind of rental. I can get this much for rent in this part of town. In this price range, people really want these kind of amenities. Understanding all of those specifics is going to be able to help you optimize rents in a way that a lot of people aren't going to be able to really drive up your rents, obviously improve cash flow, and then improve valuations. And then also constantly networking. I mean, even to this day, I still go on Google, I look for newer agents, and I call new agents every couple of weeks, where I'll take a day and I will call a half dozen new agents in the area, explain to who I am, what I'm looking for, how I can connect with them. So that additional networking, like I said, it's a daily activity where you're talking to people. But I would say that those are kind of probably the core main things that you can do literally daily is network, underwrite deals, and then look at what other people are doing in your market in terms of rent metrics and amenities and stuff like that and sales data, and digest all of that so you can kind of keep your finger on the pulse of what your market is doing.
Thank you. Are you using any AI property tools that can enable a property investor to gather the right leads for becoming a property millionaire? And if yes, what kind of tools are you using?
So as far as nothing, I don't know if the softwares that I use anything AI specific yet, but I know, for example, PropStream is one of the ones we use for, it's a list pulling service. So you can put in metrics in there and it can pull different housing lists for you. So that's one software we use. And then we use a property management software, which that actually has some AI stuff coming, but it is not integrated yet. But that, you know, allows us to make it so all of our tenants' payments, maintenance requests, leases, everything are all encompassed in one singular software, which I think a management software, as soon as you have more than a few properties, is worth spending the money on, just because it makes it so you can be a lot more organized and stay on top of stuff. I am really excited about though the AI application in the space. I do think is going to be good, because I have heard of guys working on different softwares that are supposed to be really efficient at underwriting properties, pulling lists, and really doing it quickly. But nothing we work with right now is overtly AI driven.
Thank you. I was using for a long time, actually, not AI chatbots, but just chatbots on my website. And I did notice that I was capturing a lot of the people that were just browsing my website. And so then I was capturing their name, email address, and phone number. And from there, that's I would get this message on my phone. And because I'm always checking my phone, I'm able to like capture them and have viewings with them and, you know, close deals. And also what was interesting for me is that, I mean, I would also know like where they came from, because the app would show the country where they were from, which was,
oh, cool.
This is an interesting thing, not that it matters where they were from. And but I know that now there are a lot better AI chatbots that are conversational, that can actually answer their questions, and maybe I don't even need to be involved. Like, you know, people could actually ask, you know, does this property have, you know, 3 rooms or 2 rooms or whatever, and they could be directed to a room that actually has that. And I mean, I haven't yet set up this kind of thing, but I do know that it's possible to do something like that. And I do think that will be the future of, you know, property millionaires a lot faster. Mm-hmm.
I do think that is going to be a big thing in the future as well. It just keeps getting better year over year. So,
yeah. Tell us where entrepreneurs can find more information about you and your property coaching.
Oh yeah, for sure. So if you go to my my Instagram or my YouTube, I just more recently here started posting more aggressively. But if you go on there, you'll be able to see I'm posting YouTube videos and Instagram shorts and stuff, where I'm kind of diving into a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here today, more specific. A lot of individual like case studies are kind of just like examples of things that we're dealing with in the day to day. And then if you go to my Instagram and if you shoot me a DM, you can see in my bio, I have it delineated. If you shoot me a DM in there, that's the easiest process for reaching out. And then we see if you'd be a good fit if you were interested in doing any coaching.
Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.